This podcast episode is sponsored by Statera. Statera is a web-based application that helps youth athletes and their stakeholders estimate training load, track maturation status, monitor readiness, and manage injury. Put together by coaches working with busy youth athletes, Statera helps keep things simple and brings together the most important training information in one place to ensure that effective athlete-centered decisions can be made. No more complicated Excel tutorials and spreadsheets. Just upload your athlete's data and their training schedule and start to take control of their training commitments and workload. Make more informed decisions and protect your athlete's well-being, supporting their performance. Statera takes your data very seriously. GDPR compliant and registered with the ICO, choose from a range of maturation indices and validated measures, or customize your own. Statera can record any training variable, and all your data is fully exportable. To reach out today and get a free walkthrough, head over to www.statera.uk. That's STATERA.UK. Welcome to the Athletic Evolution Podcast. Today, I'm speaking with Dan Lonsdale. Dan is an S&C coach from the UK with 9 years experience working at university level, preparing some of the country's top student performance sport athletes. In 2018, Dan Lonsdale Gymnastics Strength and Conditioning was founded with the vision of creating an encouraging environment in which young gymnasts can thrive in, whilst applying the latest research in the simplest manner, in order to enhance performance and protect them from injury. Since then, Dan is now the go-to S&C consultant for gymnastics clubs across the UK. So welcome to the podcast, Dan. It's great to have you on today. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me on.
So for those who haven't come across you, in your work in S&C and gymnastics, give us a bit of an understanding. What did your own journey in sport look like, and how have you arrived at the destination you're working in today?
It's a bit of a journey because it definitely didn't start with gymnastics. So I was very fortunate. I went to a school where I was exposed to almost any sport you sort of wanted to try your hand at. I ended up playing rugby and dipped my toe in at rowing and quickly dipped my toe back out and went back into rugby. And that sort of was my experience, really. I played a lot of rugby, went to university, continued to play rugby until about halfway through. And then I decided to, sort of get into coaching. And it was actually, I wanted to be a rugby coach initially. That's one thing I sort of looked at. But then I heard about this thing at the time is, strength and conditioning and, developing and preparing athletes for their sport. And it seemed to just interest me a lot more, like it sparked an interest. So during my university years, I started to pick up as much experience as I could just working at, local rugby clubs as, like their S&C coach or shadowing their S&C coach. And that was my first little intro into coaching, really. I met some really, lovely people who trusted me quite a lot, even though I was at a young age, to get involved with them. After university, where I went to Edinburgh Uni, I came back to Durham and I did an internship with Durham University. And that's like sort of where I'm from as well. So it was brilliant, really. And fortunately, internship went really well. And then I was kept on there for a number of years as a senior S&C coach there. And this is where, at university, you get exposed to all sorts of sports, but there was still no gymnastics there yet. But I helped set up a youth scheme called the Durham Institute of Sport, which is where we wanted to provide young sort of aspiring athletes, Olympians, whoever, in the Northeast region, particularly the Durham County, the support that they needed. So that would be around, psych, nutrition, coach education, S&C. And that was the part we played. And as part of that, I was really fortunate is that's when we started to support some gymnasts at a gymnastics club. So we got the call that we were going to go over to a gymnastics club and support, a handful of athletes that were on that sort of GB pathway and developing. And that was my first experience, and I sort of fell into it weirdly. If that whole call hadn't come through, I wouldn't have done it. But then, yeah, from there it went really well. I was really fortunate with the coach. There was a coach there, Nick Ruddock, at the time. He sort of took me under his wing in the sense of I didn't know anything about gymnastics. but I certainly knew a fair chunk about S&C, and I think we sort of we traded ideas and values off each other of what we could teach each other. And then from then, you know, that was it. I got the bug for a sport that I was never involved with as a youngster, really, and I saw a massive need. That was the major thing. So I stood in the gym and I was like, this is incredible for sure. But there's such a big need for S&C in it to protect these young athletes who are, you know, developing and going through various stages of their sort of athletic career, I suppose.
It's interesting because, you know, I've had a similar experience starting in one sport and ending up in something you never thought. And I know I've interviewed a few other guests who ended up in ballet and they, you know, started in rugby or whatever. So it's interesting because you go down this S&C route thinking, yeah, I'm going to work at this destination, and suddenly you take a big U-turn, yeah, somewhere else.
Yeah, I would never have guessed it. You know, it's not anything I ever had exposure to, or, and it just started that day, really, just going in that gym. And it was like, you know, can we actually provide support to these gymnasts? And for a while, I was probably looking at it and thinking, I'm not too sure. I was like, they seem to got a lot of boxes ticked here. But, you know, the more you look into it, you know, the more the need is there. And then, you know, eventually I moved out of the Northeast and I've come down to Nottingham now. And I have my own consultancy. So I sort of go to gymnastics clubs and I have sort of regular relationships with gymnastics clubs where I would go in on a monthly basis and sort of provide that S&C support that I think is sort of lacking at certain clubs in certain regions.
So is it that the driver, that protection of young athletes, that's the real driver for why you do what you do, or is there a deeper thing going on?
I think so. There is a protective element to it of, you know, you want them to come through the sport and, you know, feel successful throughout. You know, and obviously we know that injuries can make a young athlete feel very unsuccessful very quickly. So that's a big one for me, but also just ensuring that, you know, as cliche as it sounds, that every single one of these gymnasts is reaching their potential, regardless of what that potential is. And a big part of that is them being physically prepared enough to do the sport, because if they're not, they aren't going to be able to perform, you know, certain skills to the expectations that, you know, are required of them at competition or grades or, you know, compulsory levels.
So you obviously mentioned Nick Ruddock. Are there any other people or any other influences that stand out as being, you know, pivotal in your coaching practice or things that nudged you in a different direction?
I think so, yeah. There's a number. I guess it goes back to, you know, university. You know, the first S&C coach I guess I ever saw was Gil Stevenson, because I was at Edinburgh University. So he came in and did a lecture, and that sort of sparked an interest straight away. And he's someone who I still sort of touch base with every now and then. So that's nice to still have that relationship from the first dude you've met. All the way to, you know, I have two really good mentors at Durham University, and Luke Southgate and John Boyle, who had just been long-standing S&C coaches there, but are just doing a, you know, phenomenal job in the sports they work with and bringing on young coaches. I'm just one in a long line of people who've just come through that internship there that they do such a good job with. And then, like you said, Nick Ruddock's an important one, because without that, I wouldn't have someone to bounce those stupid questions off, really. And I probably wouldn't have developed the knowledge that I needed from a gymnastics standpoint, or been afforded the opportunities to learn, you know, if it wasn't for him. And he's someone, you know, who I'm very fortunate to call a good friend, I guess, quite lucky, because you can ask those stupid questions without judgment, which is awesome. And there's plenty of them as well. So
I'm guessing, coming from someone who originated in rugby and now working in gymnastics, it's fair, yeah, to say your coaching philosophy has probably changed in that period, yeah, of time.
A little bit, yeah. And even my coaching style, I would say, you know, just still me, but yeah, things have changed, and definitely the philosophy has changed of just trying to just improve and be more gradual. And, you know, when I've worked in rugby previously at university level, it is all about, you know, can we get into this at this point? And you're trying to really go up rapidly and increase, you know, their physicality so they can be successful. Where in gymnastics, it's a little bit more of a slow burn of, you know, you have these little ones that are coming through and you're just teaching them basics when you get the opportunity. And then you have, you know, some other ones that we're taking this a lot more seriously with, and they're on a lot more structured programs. So yeah, it's more, if anything, it's made me more patient as a coach, because we've got loads of time before, you know, they have to get there, but, you know, it's still important that they're developing physically along the way as gymnasts as well, because, you know, they are competing in an early specialization sport. So we can't just think, oh, well, it'll develop eventually. But it has made me significantly more patient as a coach overall.
That's really interesting, because that is a trait that isn't often there in team sports. Whereas you said, you know, working a sport like gymnastics, that is an early specialization sport. You know, people are hitting their peak in their teens or, yeah, you know, very close to. It's interesting to have someone who you know, espouses patience, whereas I'm really struggling to get patience across to people who work in team sports with people, yeah, who aren't going to hit their peak until mid-20s. Yeah. So that's interesting that's something you've picked up.
Yeah, and it's, yeah, I don't know where it came from, really. It's just that we do have time. And, you know, the frequency of training that they do and the amount they do, we do have time because, you know, you're seeing them so often that we, you know, we can make the aims that we need to. And like you said, in team sports, they mature a lot, you know, a lot later. And some of them are hitting the peak well into their 20s, right, in your rugby. And I think, I guess, gymnastics is the same, as we're cottoning on to this idea of longevity in the athlete. You know, the more experienced that gymnast can be, obviously the more successful they can be, right? The more experience they have at competitions, you know, the calmer they can be, the more they can refine skills. So having that patient approach is so key with young ones, because if you can stretch out their career, you know, they can be so much more successful, because you know, they can just have that wisdom that, you know, that those sort of older athletes have, you know. And it just comes from, you know, skin in the game, time spent. You can't, you know, some of them are great competitors and they will be, but you can't, you know, pot that wisdom into them in a shorter amount of time. It just takes training and patience.
Yeah, it's a really, that's an important message, I think, isn't it? Is that, as much as we love to speed development up or kind of, you know, shortcut things, yeah, some things just, like you say, it's just time in the game. It's, yeah, like you can't learn that without, you know, without putting your foot in the wrong place, without losing your grip. You can't, you know, reinforce how important that setup is without the mistakes that just time bring you.
Exactly, yeah. And it's not to say that we just sort of sit back and we let it happen, but it is one consideration is, you know, it will come in time and we will work hard to try and optimize that and get them to the points where they need to be so they can be successful and hopefully go on and progress. But it is just, you know, the key thing is we do have time. And I think nothing has shown us more than this than COVID, is popping in and out of lockdowns and then doing some really good physical preparation in lockdowns and then coming out the other side and being able to do skills has just shown that, you know, a nice, patient, systematic approach to what they're doing is leading to some success in the gym. It's transferring. So we're not rushing anything. Right? We're literally not rushing anything at all with the ones I work with. So great to see.
So tell us about a day in the life of Dan. What does it look like? I know you've got your fingers in a few different pies and coaching sessions in different places. So what does a day in the life look like?
I'm really fortunate that I've always worked at university level. So I worked at Team Durham and now I work at Nottingham Trent as an S&C coach there. So I'm involved with the student athletes there. So a day in the life for me would be very much going to Nottingham Trent, you know, do the sessions and have the meetings with the teams that would be scheduled for that day. So that, you know, the teams I work with are predominantly netball, rugby, men's hockey, and a couple of, you know, super talented scholars. And then if there's time in the day and something's been booked in the diary, I would then actually hop in the car and I would sort of drive across to somewhere. Normally, if it's in the same day as Trent, I would try and drive somewhere local and we'd do a gymnastics visit, because obviously the children would, if they're not in during the day, as some of them may be, after school, that's when gym time starts. So I sort of get there at the same time as them, really. I'm running in the gym after them. So, and then we would work through to the evening. Similar thing, really. Obviously, like, change your badge, change your clothes, and then just work through the evening. But obviously, just lots of coaching and being on the gym floor and being heavily involved in what the athletes are doing. So, you know, each gymnastic visit is about 6 hours. Depending on, you know, what time we go. So yeah, that's a normal day. Get home, walk the dog, pass out, get up, do it all again. So yeah, that coach life. But I wouldn't have it any other way, if I'm honest. You know, I feel really lucky that I have athletes at an amazing level at university, and, you know, to work with just some of the brightest young athletes in the country in gymnastics gyms across the East Midlands, which is just such a blessing, really. I feel very, very fortunate.
So you're obviously perfectly positioned to kind of juxtapose the, you know, being an S&C coach in a traditional kind of, you know, yeah, sport like gymnastics versus something, you know, maybe like you say, with your netball, your rugby, your hockey. How do those two things compare? What's it like being an S&C coach in gymnastics versus a team sport?
Yeah, it's wildly different. So, you know, in a team sport, you're involved, but you are certainly, you know, a part of the process, but it is very much they'll come and see you, or you'll do a pitch session with them and then that's it. And, you know, when we have time, we expose ourselves to as much of the sport as we can, you know, training sessions and things like that. But the difference in gymnastics is, you know, you have to be fully integrated. So you have to go and watch them train. You have to stand by side by side by the coach and, you know, offer advice when needed or when called upon. You know, is it a physical issue? Is it a technical issue? If it's a physical one, can we change something today, next week or next month that may just help them have a different feeling of what they're doing? They're wildly, wildly different. And obviously the other one is, you would presume with the older athletes that, you know, you would be going, right, take more ownership and, you know, you've got to be doing this at this time. And, you know, it's up to you how you mold your training, but actually it's exactly the same in gymnastics. You know, you try and have these conversations with these developing athletes on a similar level, if I'm honest, is because they are just so early specialization. So it's, how does it feel today? What can you feel? You know, what do you think would be benefiting you? You know, you challenge them to have those thoughts at a bit of an earlier age. And it all just comes through conversation, calm conversation, having fun, being relatable. Obviously being, you know, like a 6'3" northerner makes it sometimes difficult to relate to like a little dot of a gymnast, but having that relatability is huge, 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 huge for them. So
that's a really interesting concept, because I think that taking ownership and autonomy is, it really varies across cultures of sports, doesn't it? Like you can have two people from the same geographic area, same, you know, socioeconomic background, but one goes and does gymnastics, one goes and does rugby, and their experience of how much of a part they play in it can be completely different.
Yeah.
You know, as you say, you know, getting feedback from the athlete around feeling, and, you know, especially in a sport like gymnastics, which is hugely kinesthetic, it's, you know, very process driven in terms of things have to look a certain way, versus rugby, you know, it's like, did you catch it in the line out, yes or no? There's a real massive differences, but it's interesting to hear that difference in the autonomy side of things, because I think you probably think of gymnastics as being very autocratic, you know, traditionally.
Yeah, and traditionally I think it has, but, you know, I'm really lucky. I do have coaches where they'll, you know, they have more discussions about with them what they're doing. There are times, because they are young, you do have to lead them on a certain journey for the day, right, and steer where they're going, but you do see a lot more of, how does that feel? What could we do better? You know, do we want to have another go? And those are the things I love to hear in the gymnastics clubs I work in, because that means the coach is making the athlete part of the journey from an early age, which is awesome to see. But yeah, in terms of just them taking ownership, like a couple of observations when I first started. So I walk in this gymnastics club, super excited to start day one, never been in a gym club in my life. And I'm watching like these little girls set up their own sessions. So there's no like, you know, everything's laid out for them. If you need a mat, you know, these little girls will go, and three of them probably normally will take it and they'll drag a mat across the gym to where they need it. And I remember that was just quite striking. I was like, this is really impressive, that the fact that they're just like, they know what they need, they go and get it, and they're super organized. And then the other one was obviously just the scary thing of, you're watching a child that is clearly highly conditioned doing backflips in front of you. And I'm thinking, what am I actually going to offer here? You know, it's like, great condition, you know, doing backflips, great vertical jump, great power. You're looking at it thinking, I don't know where I'm going to fit in here. And I had that day one, I just had to sit and watch. But, you know, the more you watch things, it's like all sports, isn't it? You can see where the value lies. But yeah, those were my two main observations when I first went in a gym club, is, you know, they're so organized, and actually, you know, what the hell am I going to do with these gymnasts? Because it's very different. It's very, very different.
I had a brief foray into, I guess, the world of gymnastics. I was doing a little bit of work for as an EIS contractor with trampolining down in Bournemouth.
Well, amazing.
And it was awesome to watch, because you come in and see, you know, 10-year-old kids doing a 30-minute warm-up, which I thought, that is a full session for any other sport. You know, the amount of press-ups they're doing, or, you know, hanging leg raises or whatever. I'm like, that's, you know, if they put a rugby athlete through that, they'd be like, right, I'm done. Whereas that guy, they're just getting started.
they are literally genuinely warming up. And that's one thing, you know, a massive learning I got from Nick Ruddock, is just making sure they are just working hard, because the sport demands it of them. And by not doing that, you know, you're doing them a bit of an injustice of anything. You know, they have to work hard, because the sport requires them to do it. You know, there's, you know, a number of apparatuses that could be just sports in themselves. And they're doing it, you know, all in one day at a competition, or, you know, within 1 week, they're covering, you know, four things that you could easily split up and they'll be separate sports if you weren't a purist.
Yeah, I found the psychology of gymnastics really interesting. I mean, obviously, there's that kind of thing in gymnastics as well, where the older athletes kind of get their coaching badge and start coaching the younger ones.
Yeah.
One of the guys I was coaching, I remember, he was, you know, doing some of the basic conditioning stuff that they do. And he had one of his athletes, I think they were doing, you know, hanging leg raises. And he said, right, if you can do 10, I'll let you do 20. Which, you know, in any other sport, someone would look at you like you're mad, but these kids are, you know, they're right down for it, you know.
They're like, let me do more, you know. And it's lovely. Like, we, I think as coaches, we all like those athletes that you would rather rein in than like have to shove along a little bit. And there's plenty of the ones that you need to rein in, you know, but it's because they love it. They actually love it. So they'll finish gym and they'll go home and they'll do more gym. Then they'll get up and they'll do some more gym before school. And it's, I don't know, you just can't, that's such great passion from such an early age in a sport. It's hard not to be inspired by it. And I think actually that's what probably got me such involved with it, is they're so committed from an early age. You know, they need people around them, you know, as well as their technical coaches, obviously, who are, you know, support staff who are hugely committed in their journey as well, regardless of what level you're at. It's trying to get them to where they want to go is the key thing for me.
One of the things I came across in one of your social media posts was the concept of layering, which I thought was brilliant, and actually did a far better job of explaining something that I was trying to communicate around, you know, gradually increasing in exercise. So talk to us a little bit about that. What do you mean by layering? What does that look like?
It came around just by coaching in the gym clubs. So within, you know, when it's S&C time, you know, some clubs will send, you know, their older athletes and their younger athletes, but a lot of clubs will send, you know, athletes of all ages to you at the same time. So before you know it, some of the things that you have written down programmed aren't particularly suitable for those of an early age, or it's probably not worth playing that trump card just yet. There's a lot of things to come. So what I try and do for the key exercises is I try and have progressions and regressions for almost every major exercise that you would think of as an S&C coach. And within that session, once we start, it's very much, you know, there's the little ones cracking on doing, you know, at its simplest level, we'll be doing like a prisoner squat with some decent tempo, you know, at the top end. The other bandwidth at the top end would be the older ones doing some, you know, decent heavy-ish back squat and everything in between. And what that means is within that session, because I've layered the exercises that I'm doing, the little ones are getting the adaption that we need. And a lot of that would be just around motor control, mastering the basics, understanding where they are in space, which obviously they grasp pretty quickly for a squat if you can go upside down and know where you are. And obviously the older ones, we're actually trying to chase adaption, and we're trying to improve them so, you know, so they can cope with the skills that they've got, but also so they can progress those skills, get more flight time. So that concept of layering has just grown quite organically over time. And it sounds chaotic when you first start it, but actually when you look, if you take a step back and look at the session as it runs, you just sort of see everyone just getting on with it because that's the environment. So, you know, I'm very fortunate that they're so organized as gymnasts that they're not coming over and sort of saying, how many of these again? What's this again? It's very, once it's said, they're like, cool. And it occurs. But yeah, it's just been developing over time. I would love to put more content out there, but obviously can't get in and get anything filmed right now. But yeah, hopefully over time, if you keep checking it out, I'll keep trying to put out, you know, what I'm using for my layering. And I think it's more the concept that is interesting for coaches as opposed to the order that I do it. I think everyone should have their own order. But, you know, I think the concept of layering could be used massively in other sports. I think it would have massive benefit.
Yeah, I think that's huge. It's something I've arrived at over the period. And I think maybe you're right. It takes time, right? It takes time of learning what progression fits after what, and what's a regression of that. And what, you know, what exercise works well, you know, sequenced after this one. And it is a bit of trial and error to realize, you know, for me, these are the 10 exercises I use because I know they work better than these other ones that other people are trying out at the moment. So every time someone comes in and says, well, why you've chosen that over that, it's like, I can explain it to you, but I don't have time because I've got to condense 10 years worth of coaching into 10 minutes. But I can tell you that's a better choice.
Yeah, it just does for me. It just fits for the environment. And even within certain gym clubs, it would change, you know, because you're scraping together kettlebells, barbells, weighted vests, bags, whatever you can grab your hands on as an SSE coach, you're using it as equipment. So yeah, you know, it changes, but having the concept is awesome, you know, and hopefully it's something that I'll continue to refine. But I think it's also nice for the younger athletes, I say little ones, the younger ones, to look up and sort of see where they're going. You know, you can tell them where they're going, but I think if you show them where they're going, before you know it, you know, the buy-in is already there, and they're almost ambitious to get to the next point. I want to do what that person's doing. And if you ask them why, they wouldn't be able to tell you, but it's more because they want to do what their peers are doing. And obviously there's nothing more inspiring for a young gymnast than an older gymnast. And, you know, having those involved in the same session, I think is awesome. Mm. Or you know, you see them looking at them when they're doing harder conditioning or whatever, you can sort of, you see them having a little glance over there, and that's something that I love to keep them all around each other and working. You know, there's no need to separate them off too much, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's massive. And that's, again, one of the reasons I've used it is, and it, I think maybe, and our experiences are probably similar here, in that it's come out of necessity.
Yeah.
In terms of, like you said, like for me, it probably came out of experiences of coaching in central London on a basketball court with 20 athletes, you know, and I'm thinking, okay, all I've got is body weight. How can I make this more difficult? How can I manipulate tempo or, you know, the stability element, or, you know, go unilateral, whatever. And you build this catalog of exercises where someone turns up and says, oh, can you do this session? I've got 20 athletes. And you're like, fine. I know I can coach 20 different athletes at once because I've accumulated the knowledge of how I can make this one harder and that one easier. But I think when you have the luxury of coaching in a gym with all the bells and whistles, you don't develop that skill set or that knowledge bank.
Yeah. And it's taken me, you know, years and years, because I did, you know, I do and still do, but I did coach in a gym with all the bells and whistles. So I couldn't, you know, if we didn't have something, we'd ask for it. It'd arrive in a parcel the next week. Where, you know, in a gym club, it's, you're making the best choices with the, you know, the best equipment that you can find or use. And like I said, like basketball courts are even more aggressive, right? You just have space and that's it, figure it out. But yeah, it sounds like it's driven by necessity for you as well, which is super interesting to hear, you know, that concept. And I can imagine we're not the only two that are trying our best with the spaces that we've got.
I think that's one of the really interesting things for me, I think, that came out of lockdown, was developing that skill set in a whole nother level with body weight and calisthenics and gymnastics. Because, you know, like you, that's not my background, but I suddenly realized, well, okay, how can I make this harder when I don't have any resistance? You know? Yeah. So that, again, was kind of taking that to another level again.
Yeah, super. Yeah, it's super interesting. And, you know, I guess a lot of coaches would look at a gymnastics club and be like, it's an absolute playground, which is so true. But obviously some of the things that are necessary for the gymnast in order for them to develop isn't the gymnastic specific stuff. It's obviously the more general side of things. And, you know, I know we spoke briefly about it before. It's almost back to front of how we would do things. You know, like a lot of things my gymnasts do are quite general, and we're trying to build like some general strength, general adaption, where obviously, you know, when gymnastics is used outside of the gym in other sports, you know, we're using it in a lot more of a specific way, I guess you would say. So yeah, it's super, super interesting.
So what do you, you know, coaching in both those contexts, obviously, as you touched on, a lot of S&C coaches, you know, espouse the kind of how they'd love to get more gymnastics in their coaching sessions, or can see the value of doing some gymnastic exercises, whether it's a handstand or, you know, even a forward roll or just things like that, into other sports. Where do you see, you know, I guess, as you said, in that first session of going, what's my contribution here? What do you see as being the kind of gap that, that you, the S&C side of things fits in?
For gymnastics?
Yeah.
Definitely jumping and landing mechanics. So that was one of my first major observations, really, is because the skills that they're doing are so complex, obviously that takes a huge amount of attention away from the technical coach, and as it should. The child is upside down and they're twisting, so that's the thing we've got to focus on before they come back down. But for me, it was just taking the time to actually coach a landing with nothing else before it, nothing prior, and making it part and parcel of what they practice, whether it's on one legs, two legs, altitude landings, broad jumps, whatever it is, it's part of their warm-up. So they actually think about landing before they even think about jumping off the floor. And that's the sort of mindset I want them to be in at the end of the warm-up, is they've thought about landing before anything else, because before they know it, that focus will have to shift, and it has to, it's important. So that's my first major one. And then the other one is, you know, they need to get stronger in order to cope with what's being asked of them. So just building, you know, general base levels of strength, and as unsexy as it sounds, is actually fundamental for them as gymnasts. And, you know, I haven't done any studies or anything like that, but, you know, the clubs I've worked with, we've found as strength levels gone up, you know, quality of gymnastics work has gone up, whether that is shaping, absorbing landing, you know, producing force on the beam, the ability to do like more complex skills or have more time in the air to do complex skills. So that's the other key thing. So jumping and landing and just having a really good foundational level of strength. And that's strengths in all ranges, all planes. You know, you're trying to challenge them when they're strong and long, or we're trying to get them short and compressed. You know, we're playing around with shapes and we're trying to explain to them why that's important as well. Like trying to build that why within young athletes is super important.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting because we obviously in other sports would consider the importance of landing mechanics all the time. But actually, if you think about gymnastics even more so, like this, the elements of speed, of height, of torque, of, you know, as you say, but I mean, probably the most extreme examples of jumping and landing from a combination of, you know, all three planes. But yeah, maybe that's not the first thing that springs to mind when people look at someone spinning through the air.
No, it isn't. And it isn't for anyone, because I think the moment, you know, you're naturally drawn to the bit that comes before it. But, you know, they are marked at competition on quality of landing. And that's something that can be improved, we know for a fact, by just coaching the skill of landing. So yes, it will improve performance, but also, you know, when they're landing, they're going through 15 times body weight. And that's a startling amount. And granted, they're only, you know, they're little and they're lean, but, you know, 15 times anyone's body weight is so significant. And it's, you know, you read the literature and you're rubbing your eyes some nights, just like, man, we need to keep going and working. And it drives me to keep trying to push them. But yeah, 16 times body weight, depending on what you're reading. But it's no surprise, like you said, when they release a bar, you know, you've got all sorts of angular velocities and torque going on, and you've now got to land and stick it.
I guess we probably look at other sports that have a more true agility element in terms of something that's unplanned, right? Obviously gymnastics, you know, routines, it's planned, it's done time and time again, but that doesn't mean that makes it any less difficult to land well, having come off the vault, or, you know, because there's so many different things happening at such a high speed and with so, you know, small margins of error.
Yeah, exactly. And we talk about small margins of errors. If, you know, you do get the smallest bit wrong in certain areas, things can go wrong, you know, pretty quickly. Just even lapses in concentration that would occur in other sports. You know, you drop the ball, it's not the end of the world. You would just pick it up and start again. Where, you know, a lapse of concentration in a gymnastics environment is, you know, it can be quite worrying. But, you know, that's where the technical coach comes in. And, you know, I'm super blessed to work with ones that, you know, are planning really structured, well sensible, you know, well workloaded programs. So they're not putting that much sort of stress on them where they're making those daft mistakes.
So what about the flip side? We've obviously talked about bringing S&C to gymnastics. What about, have you got any experience taking those gymnastic skills and using them with your hockey players, rugby players, et cetera?
Yeah, not so much my hockey lot, but my netballers, my rugby players go upside down on the regular. So they're not doing the most flawless handstands, but we're certainly doing, you know, handstand holds, you know, pike handstand push-ups, you know, playing around in that upside down position. I think being in gymnastics has sort of made me a little bit more of a playful coach with my older athletes. And actually you see that side of them come out as well. Traditionally I wasn't that much, like that's not my skill set. That's something I have to work quite hard to do. So yeah, they do a little bit of that. We definitely do lots of core work. So hollowing, arching, various types of rollouts. Trying to put them in as long positions as possible and getting them to master their body weights, whilst obviously telling them that it's, you know, a 10-year-old can do this, so can you, which goes down like a ton of bricks. But yeah, it's great. It's just, you know, I'm stealing stuff off gymnastics coaches as much as they're nicking stuff off me, if not more, if I'm honest. You know, I'm taking bits and putting it into my own conditioning within gym clubs, other gym clubs, you know, at university level. The way they prepare the athletes for the sport to some extent is you know, they're spot on with a lot of the things they do. There's areas where there's no doubt, like any sport, where they have to improve and they have to improve upon quickly. But, you know, being able to produce well-conditioned athletes that can do a huge encyclopedia amount of exercises and understanding, they're probably the best in the game at it, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I think gymnastics, you know, taking it from the conventional side of gymnastics and bringing it to SNC Pro really offers something different, because it's one thing to get your back squat from 90 kilos to 100 kilos, you know, great, it's a PB. But when you unlock a handstand, it's a whole new skill. It's not just you've upgraded a previous skill. It's suddenly a whole new door has opened. And I think there's a real element of, like you said, play, but also just something, it offers something completely different to your typical resistance training.
Exactly. And, you know, fortunate to have conversations with, you know, Tim Stevenson from School of Cali. And if you ever hear him speak about, I don't want to do him a disservice in how he speaks about it, but if you hear him speak about why calisthenics is so important for shoulder health, is because it's, you're not progressing from the yellow band to the blue band. You know, you're progressing through something that is athletic, something that is playful, you know, something that is progressive, you know, with your body weight. And, you know, I think it's proven. You know, it doesn't mean that those things aren't important, you know, regular shoulder health care, for example. But I think, yeah, the ability to shift your body weight, you know, through calisthenics, through gymnastics, however, whatever we're calling it, is, you know, it's unbelievable for athletes. And you can see the frustration when they first start. Super talented athletes at university level will presume that they can do the majority of things. You probably can in the weight room. Yeah, you probably can. You should. But when you start challenging them with things that they've never done, you know, it's really, really interesting to see. And they go through frustration to playfulness with it. And it's nice to see them discover that side of their sport and their side of training again.
So for those, I mean, I've done that myself. I'm trying to utilize some of Tim's work and, you know, some of the stuff from gymnastics. You know, all my guys have, you know, handstand walk-ups and frog stands, all that kind of stuff in their program. Some probably love it more than others. Certainly not the 6'5" second rows who've got a long way down. But so for someone like me who doesn't have that background in gymnastics, I guess much like yourself, what advice would you give them if they're wanting to utilize some of those basic gymnastic skills in their traditional SNC program?
As a coach, I think the first one would be, you know, gymnastics clubs, they are super welcoming. You know, you find the right ones and they'll welcome you in, but why don't you try and go and ask whether you can, you know, observe a session? And I wouldn't even say observe the best ones. I'd be observing like their recreational sessions that they do with the youngsters. And you'd be surprised how many warm-up ideas you're going to pick up like that. Like literally you could fill a notebook within one session, you know, with what they're doing with the little ones. So I think that would be my first bit of advice, is don't be afraid to reach out and go to these places and they'll welcome you in. You know, you can probably rent gymnastics clubs for a period of time. So I think at the back end of COVID, that would be something that would be lovely as well to be happening. You know, I'm sure they'd be grateful for the work coming in. And then the other one would be look at the sport and look at what's fundamental to it. And then use your imagination as how would you get to a handstand, for example. And you would have to obviously shorten the lever. So you'd be going frog stand, pike handstand, handstand against the wall, tiptoeing off the wall, you know, things like that. And you know, have that playfulness of trying to dissect what is a complex movement, you know, and turning it into what is a training modality for S&C coaches. And that's the key thing, is what bit is useful. And what bits can you take from that sport, and what bits should potentially probably stay where they belong in gymnastics, performed by gymnasts. So, because, you know, you see a couple of things butchered, which probably should just stay with the gymnasts. But yeah, I think get involved and try and dissect it, but reach out and ask questions to gymnastics coaches. They'll be more than willing. I'd guarantee, you know, they'll be more than willing to provide you with some brilliant ideas that you could implement the next day, and your athletes will be smiling away at the end of the session. For a number of reasons, but yeah, they'd be smiling away.
Yeah, I think that's really useful advice. I think it's much like weightlifting in that, you know, we want to take components. I'm not trying to train weightlifters. I'm not trying to train gymnasts, but there's elements of that training that I can see are beneficial, and I'll include those bits. Maybe, you know, doing a triple back off something is probably out of reach, but, you know, maybe getting a basic 10-second handstand is going to be good bang for my buck.
I would say so. It's a good party trick as well for anyone moving forward, isn't it? You know, where, you know, the stuff that we take are what the the gymnastics community would be calling the basics. And they're taking those basics and they're just shoving them 10 times higher in the complexity of what they're doing. And, you know, that's the bit I like as well, is, you know, looking into something that is so complex and trying to unpick it and see whether you can help. Just as a coach, I think we all just want to help, don't we, and be of some support for coaches. And yeah, that's the bit I like, is the bit past the basics and trying to move them on and go from there.
So are there any sort of resources that spring to mind? I mean, I guess you could go a few ways with this, if it was specific S&C stuff or intro gymnastics stuff, anything that springs to mind that you might signpost coaches towards?
I would do exactly what I did, which is, if you want to get involved in gymnastics, immerse yourself in it. So, you know, try and stay away from the traditional S&C stuff that we, you know, we probably would all read and recommend, and immerse yourself in the gymnastics community. So, you know, I'm very fortunate that my friend Nick has a couple of really good groups that are part of it, and they share gymnastics ideas, and they call it physical preparation ideas. In there, there's a brilliant guy called Dave Tilley, who's also doing some, you know, sharing some very good content of what is the drills that he's finding very useful for preparing his athletes. He's a physical therapist and a S&C coach and a gymnastics coach, so he's an interesting one to look at as well. And just follow people who are working with gymnasts. You know, I put out what I'm using with mine on the regular, just hoping that it's not just useful for the gymnastics community, but actually people far and wide can maybe just pluck bits out and ask questions. And you'd be surprised how many people are watching and will ask you a certain question as to why you're doing something or how to do it, or if you're not in a gym club, how would you do it?
That leads very nicely to me asking, where can people find your own social media channels to see some of the things you're putting out?
Yeah, it's Dan Lonsdale SC. Super original. Yeah, that's it. And then obviously I have a website, which is danlonsdale.com. But a lot of my stuff goes out on social for now. You know, if you do have any questions, I sort of implore anyone to just get in touch, and, you know, I'll try and get back to you as soon as I can, and hopefully try and answer it. But yeah, feel free to follow me on there, and you'll see, you know, I sort of post what's going on throughout the day as well at the club. So if I'm watching something and I think it's fairly cool, which is on very regularly, you know, it goes on, and you just sort of get a little snippet of what's going on in gymnastics clubs.
Cool. So what's next for you? What's happening in the next sort of 12 to 24 months? You got any kind of projects or plans coming up?
I guess, you know, 12 months, you would like to think that we're back in a place where everything feels a little bit normal, and, you know, that we're not having to be plunged back into lockdown. So I guess just coming out and making sure the people that have supported me throughout lockdown, which are the clubs that are still supporting me, and I support them, you know, that they're in a good place to begin with. And then, you know, following on from that is probably just trying to just spread the reach out a little bit further. So, you know, I'm willing to sort of help anyone who asks, really. So trying to do some more one-off visits where I go and provide, you know, some talks and some education to, you know, gymnastics. But also, you know, I think over the next 12 months, I would like to maybe go over and do some lecturing or some speaking at places about, you know, how to take all of these amazing things from this novel environment and add it to your own coaching, and how to do that, and how to settle into a very novel environment when you're not from it as well, I think is an interesting thing. So yeah, just gradually expanding, no rush. Just pick up, you know, clubs that want to work on a regular basis for a long time. And that's the thing we discussed before we ever worked together, really, is this is very much a long-term commitment from everyone involved. And it's just hopefully pick up a couple more of them and just help out best I can with the gymnastics community.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for your time today. I know some of those insights have been really helpful, and I mean, I've taken a lot away, so I know other people will too.
No, awesome. No, yeah, like I appreciate you, you know, you having me on, because you've had some incredible speakers on the podcast. So I feel very, very privileged to be a part of that.
If you enjoyed this episode, there's a number of simple things you can do to help support the podcast. First, hit subscribe on your chosen podcast player so you're kept up to date with the latest episode releases. Second, you can leave us a review to help us reach more coaches and parents like yourself. Third, you can send this episode on to a coach or friend to help spread the word. And then fourth, you can find us on social media, on Facebook using Athletic Evolution, and on Instagram and Twitter using the handle @AthleticEvoUK.